This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, we're here, we're live. It is Wednesday morning. Wednesday, can you believe that when we had a Monday off now, it confuses everybody. We don't know what day of the week it really is.
Yeah, I'm still kind of lost.
It really screws with your whole clock and everything else. Mm. These public holidays, we've got to rationalize them. I've said it 1,000 times.
But that's why, Gareth, you know, the Masters is holding me in place this week. So I know today's the practice day / par 3 contest. Tomorrow's round 1.
Okay.
If it wasn't for that, I'd be a scattered mess of functionality.
Okay.
Wow. Not exaggerating at all, though.
No.
No. Well spotted, yeah.
All right. Well, it's a lot to get through today. We've got a busy show for you this morning. Couple of things. Do you remember when I went to Berlin? I met one of our listeners over there, a guy called Stefan Panzer, and I actually spent a bit of time with him in Berlin. And he showed me around, and we went to a couple of interesting places. And he's actually in South Africa at the moment. He's originally from Cape Town, and he is here for the first time in 4 years to say hi to his family.
Jeez.
Yeah, how's that?
Talking about the days being confusing, when did you go to Berlin again? The years are just confusing.
It was last year.
It was in May, June last year.
Okay.
Yeah, so this wasn't even that long ago, but it feels like an age.
So do you think it's been 4 years because technology is so good that's how you catch up, or have they had like a rift?
We'll find out. He's coming in. He'll join us in a little while.
I'm not ready to host like a family reunion situation.
That is really funny. Sure.
Ben woke us up with this horrible breaking news.
Yeah.
Like, Ben, is this what you just read up on at 4 a.m?
Well, Ben seems to be the angel of death because he's the one who keeps telling us about people who've died. He told me about Winnie Mandela on Monday afternoon.
Mm.
And now he tells me, Pam Golding died.
Why does your Pam Golding
sound
like
Helen Zeller? You remember we always used to, those ads, we used to take the piss out of people who did those terrible ads for Pam Golding estates or Pam Golding properties or whatever they are, and where everybody would go, I'm Pam.
Oh, no.
Remember, everyone in the company was made to say, I'm Pam. Well, aren't you glad you really aren't? Because you would have been dead this morning.
Alrighty.
Well, that's one way to go. But, I mean, poor old Pam, they were wheeling her out in those ads very late in the day. And they made her go to, like, places with stairs. But, yeah, she was 90. Pam Golding was 90.
Those are good innings. And, you know, it's not that I really actually knew much about her. But as I was reading up this morning, she did a lot of great work throughout her career. And I didn't realize how big Pam Golding Properties was.
Yeah.
It's a massive thing, and she, you know, it's kind of interesting. Like she and Winnie Madikizela Mandela should die within a day of each other, because here you have two women who really were fighting like for a place in the sun, and for so many other people in so many ways. And I don't compare them because the one is a businesswoman and the other one is an activist, and you know, there are a whole lot of differences, obviously, but there are also similarities. I mean, like it. You know, starting an estate agency and starting a property empire like Pam Golding started when there weren't any.
In 1976.
I mean, there must have been a tough time to start a business.
Sure.
Especially as a woman. And to call it your name, you know, with what we started here at Cliff Central, I was really nervous to give my name to it because I thought if it's a fucking disaster, which any business can be. Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as a sure thing in business. So then I'm going to be tied up with that forever.
But how many times did Pam just go the safe route knowing her company depended on it? I mean, she could have gone into drugs. She could have partied. She could have really thrown it out there.
You really think so?
And then she was like, you know what? People work for me. Pam Golding. I'm going to say,
no to
parties.
Partying.
She lived in the straight and narrow, and she did it for the good of her company and all her employees. So you got to commend
her. Or she might have just been a good, decent human being.
Look, Pam was in those conscientious circles. I reckon there was a chance to swing and do stuff. And she was like, nope, taking the high road.
You reckon?
I think so.
Wow.
I actually can't. Over 300 offices in Africa, Germany, France, and Mauritius as well.
300 offices. That's a lot of weight on your name.
Huge. That's incredible. Mm. So well done to Pam.
Yeah, 90. I think you're good there. And you've done great work as it is.
Yeah, I think you can call yourself a success. And I think she, you know, she leaves a lot of family in her wake, who've obviously very pleased with her contribution, because they will have scored.
The statement doesn't really say what happened to her. They just said that lady. She passed away at the age of 90. But my whole thing is, I don't really care about age much. I just want to go when I'm good. Like, before I start being a burden, before, if I'm too sickly.
Yeah, but the problem is, like, the minute before you become a burden, you're fine. And suddenly you're a burden, and
I don't think
you're going to see them come walking down the aisle with syringes and things, and they're, okay, it's time for Sia to be put out, and you're like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Well, as soon as now I'm having weekly visits to my doctor, I'm just like, let's call it a day.
You know, we say this now while we're young and very clinical of thought, but when we get older, we're going to be looking forward to something as quick, as small as like passing like bowel movements, and you go, you know, tomorrow I really hope I can do that. I'm not ready to die yet, because it's all relatives here. Mm. Your life becomes so crap when we look at it now. But when you're in those 80s, seriously, climbing 3 stairs is going to be the biggest moment of your day, and you're going to be like, tomorrow I really want to do that again.
No.
And then you won't want to die, because unfortunately, mm-hmm. much like cockroaches, we are survivalists.
You know what? Your survival instinct is strong, man.
It's very strong.
You'd be surprised. There are some people, even really, really weak, really loserish people, who, when that survival instinct kicks in, man, they are a tiger. Mm-mm-mm. They will do anything to survive.
No, I'm not trying to be clinging morbid. To life. No, thank you.
No, I agree with you. I mean, practically, I would love it if you would just, like, wouldn't it be great if you lived a healthy, happy life, and then at a certain point, you knew that you had maybe a couple of weeks, a couple of months, mm-hmm. a couple of years. And you just knew, like, somewhere at the end of that period, it would all just be finished. And I suppose that's kind of life, because you do know that you've maybe got 100 years, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Maybe 80, maybe, you know, 110, if you're very lucky. But at some point, sometimes... This is the real question. It's like, would you want your mind or your body to go first?
Mind.
See, we've had this discussion before, and I still haven't got an answer for you.
Oh, no. I'd rather ignorance is bliss. I will have a great old time in my messed up world.
Yeah, but it's really hard for people who love you if you go mentally, because then you're not there.
I guess it's kind of like a scrotum theory. The moment you start to look like that's the benchmark right there.
Scrotum theory. Ben has got a lot of theories. He told me the other day his theory about short people.
I did?
Mm. You had a whole complicated theory about short people and confidence and like a whole lot of things. Well, do you remember it?
Sometimes I tell you things in confidence and okay, this works well.
Do you remember it?
I don't actually.
Oh. Well, now I'm...
No, Gary, sometimes I just completely make these things up, so don't ever give me too much credit.
Evidently, because this one you don't even remember saying. Mm. I remember there was some... I made a mental note, like, remember to ask Ben about the short people theory.
Mm.
And you don't remember it?
No, a lot of the time I make things up as we go along.
That's a real
disappointment. That's just how educated you are, and so many thoughts swirling through
your
head.
He pulls shit out of
the
sky, that's what he does. That's
pretty much what I do, guys. I'm only here for the lols, and it's always been the case.
Okay.
The lols.
Who are you? Like, are you a 12-year-old kid now?
Sometimes.
A girl?
Maybe I am.
Meanwhile, I got out of bed this morning, and for the first time I was a little bit chilly, and I thought, you can feel that winter feeling in the air. And you know when you suddenly think, and I haven't thought about wearing layers.
Mm-hmm.
I left the house this morning. I was like, maybe I should take a jacket. Haven't felt like that for a couple of months. It's been since at least October, November last year, and probably before then. Now suddenly I'm going,
So getting out of bed is going to be tougher. The first thing Ben said to me this morning, I greeted him with a smile. I go, Ben, how are you? He goes, tired. I'm like, sorry.
Well, I'm still tired.
He's such a pleasure first thing in the morning.
I actually am
lucky Daniela.
I am.
Lucky meowses.
I ask him, why are you tired? He goes, it's 4 minutes to six. What do you expect, yeah. Sia? I'm
like, well, what do you want, Sia? Do you want a bit of a, hey, Sia, I'm great. How are you?
Yes. Well, that's what he's like.
That's what he's like, yes. For the 27,000th time, I'm not Sia.
You see, once again, another prime example as to why I don't want to live too long. I don't want to get like, ugh.
Say it, yeah.
Grumpy.
Grumpy.
You don't want to get become a criminus, a grumpy.
I'm not grumpy. I'm just honest. Like, there's a big difference. Why do you keep want to box me in?
Yeah, okay.
You people are just weird.
Oh, you people.
Yeah.
See, that's what grumpy people
you
say.
You constantly try to box me in and label me as something. I'm just here. I'm here for the lols.
Wow. Here for the lols. This is your new life mission.
Not gonna make you sound cool enough.
All right. Anyway,
I'm not looking for that, Sia. I'm cool enough. I
need your advice. I met someone the other day.
Ooh.
No. It's not that bad.
Sorry, I thought you were calling the love desk.
That boat's sailed. We've left that one.
So this person says to me, "I really want to be an actor." Now, forgive me, but I didn't have any feedback for this person. I had nothing to say to them. I don't know how to advise someone who has such a crazy and ridiculous goal for themselves. I know that there are a lot of people in the world who want to be actors, and you know, they see the actors in movies and in TV series and all the rest of it. Now, I love a good TV series. I told you I started watching Billions season 2 again, and I'm going to start now with the next season, which has just begun.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch those actors and I think these guys are really good. You know that Paul Giamatti? What a guy. The guy plays the district attorney general. You know, the fatter little guy who with a beard who has the wife and they like to beat each other up and stuff.
Ah, yeah.
You know, the
guy.
Whips and chains and stuff. Anyway, he is such a great actor. He really is terrific. Him and so is the dude. What's his name? Damien. The
Ginger guy.
Ginger guy. The Billions dude. Axelrod. Bobby Axelrod. Now, I love these actors, but I'm well aware that they're acting. I know that this is it's a play. It's theater. It's fantasy. It's not real. It's not the real world.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people want to go into acting because they either don't like the real world and they're trying to live in a fantasy because they think their life would be happier if they play characters than if they themselves, which is obviously at the extreme. The other people think acting is this glamorous job you get kowtowed to, and it is. If you've ever worked on a TV set or you've been in a movie, and many of us haven't, but let me tell you what it's like because I have. TV and movies at their best are terrific because you get looked after like you're an invalid. You get ferried around. They fetch and take you everywhere. They dress you. They sort out your hair and makeup. They feed you. They make sure that you have a place to sleep. I mean, you know, these movie actors live in trailers for a couple of months of the year. Now, it sounds horrible, but these are luxury trailers. They get treated like they are gods and goddesses. They get kowtowed to everywhere they go. It's a hell of a life. But it doesn't last for long because even the greatest actors, you have a project now and then a month later, you don't have anything. You finish up your movie that took a couple of months and then you do not necessarily, unless your agent is the best agent in the world and you are the greatest actor in the world. And remember, out of all the actors that are actually waitering in Hollywood and in Los Angeles at the moment, maybe 0.001% of them make serious money. The rest are just trying to make ends meet.
Yeah, once you get a role, then you feel you're too good to be serving champagne.
And especially in this country, there are only... You know what the best paying jobs are for actors in this country?
Series. Politicians.
Soap operas. Soap operas. So when this person said to me they want to be an actor, I was so disappointed in them. Like, I wasn't even sure I could still be their friend afterwards. Because it's like you saying to me, well, I could be a success. I could make a difference in the world. But I've chosen to be as average as possible, if not less than average. Yeah.
Really?
Yes, because acting's bullshit, and I don't know how to tell this person that. I try to be an honest person, right? So I was like, that's interesting. Do you have any other interests? Like trying to steer them away from acting. So they said no. And I don't know that that's a thing. Like, you could never, ever have got away with being an actor in our grandparents' generation. They would have said, you, go get out. Get out of the room. It's not a job. It's not a real thing.
Well, I have many points and aspects that I'd like to take you up on.
Go on.
You go first.
Excuse me as I sway out of the stage and the curtains lift up and the spotlight is on. I just can't for the life of me remember which actor said this recently. But I remember I was just watching this interview and they're a very accomplished and successful performer and they're talking about their love for the craft. But at the end of the day, they said, I understand, though, that we are not performing life-saving surgery. And I think, though, I don't know where you are in this greater scheme of things with what you're saying. Acting is a job, though. You know, to some people, they take it very seriously. And you know what? To some people, it's their passion and they have a natural knack for it as well. But I don't think it's fair to equate it and say that it's not a serious job in general. Serious to you, but, you know, it's serious to someone else.
Yeah,
but at the end of the day, it serves a different role and purpose. That's just like saying, oh, well, there's no need for what? A typist or someone to do the filing.
No. The typists are really important compared to actors.
Are important, Gareth.
You think about how much do you watch in a day then?
Exactly. How many times have you watched a movie and gone, oh, this movie is so great, and you talk about it gushingly, or like you crap on about Billions?
Mm.
That's because actors decided they're going to be actors. Everyone's got a purpose. Like I said to you so many times, as long as you're not interfering with children or stealing state money, are you that bad of a person, really? Okay, so did this person say, hi, Gareth, I would like to be an actor. Please, can you give me a midden rant? Is that how the conversation went?
No.
Okay, so there's no burden on you personally.
Yeah, but they're asking me to, I don't know, to make them feel better about their life choice, and I can't.
Are they? Or they're not just conversing with you. Because,
no.
So they must just talk about you then.
No, absolutely not. What the fuck is wrong with you? No, they didn't want to talk about me.
So he's not asking you for anything. They were just basically sharing an interest in life.
No, they were saying, what do I think of that decision, of that life path? And I struggled to find an upshot. Because this person is not going to be a movie star. They're going to be at best some also-ran cameo on a crap show.
And if that makes them happy, and then?
All right. I mean, I'm asking...
Would you prefer saying, Gareth...
Like that guy asked me, I'm asking you guys what you would tell.
Would you prefer... Hi, Gareth, I'm now selling Amway. Would you prefer that conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. Would you? Yeah, because they're not going to try and sell that to me.
Great, because
then we can move on to other topics.
Suddenly they'll be like, I'm going to show you my new car. Oh, by the way, look at this new toothpaste from Amway.
All right, so what would you say? You would lie to this person and say, that's great.
No, I wouldn't lie to that person, but I wouldn't go to the point of saying that your life is going to be pointless and this is a stupid thing to do.
Mm.
I would just be honest and say, I think there's better things you can do with the time because you've got to assess, are you going to be happy by not making money? Are you going to be happy by constantly having to prove yourself to complete and utter strangers? And that could be an easier conversation to have. I'm just telling them that they're just fucking stupid.
I didn't say that.
No, I definitely meant it. You were thinking that.
You definitely meant it.
I think I said, is there anything else you're interested in? Is that your real, like, that's your heart's desire? That's what you want more than anything else? And they were like, yeah. And then I sort of ran out of things to say. So I let them ramble for a little bit. Luckily, I wasn't trapped in a conversation. It wasn't just the two of us in the room. So I could get away. But I didn't know what else to say about that. I can't really take it. You know, it's like, it's sort of if you say to me that you collect.
You're going to speak about the arts in general here.
You collect mosses for a living. Let's say you're the kind of scientist you go around the world collecting mosses.
Mm-hmm.
Mosses are a fascinating type of plant, right? They probably, there are more species of moss than there are of almost any other kind of plant. So it could keep you busy for your whole life, and you might discover something really helpful about a moss that might make humanity a little more appreciative of these stupid plants. But I don't know that I'm going to be fascinated to talk to you for more than a couple of minutes. And that's fine. And like Ben says, no one's being harmed in the process, right?
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with it. And God alone knows we need someone to look for the mosses, because I'm not going to, and Sia's not going to, and Ben's not going to. But it's a very bizarre life choice. And acting is the same, because acting is a luxury thing. Like, if humanity were in peril, we wouldn't go, what we need is an actor.
But we aren't in peril.
I disagree again.
We aren't in peril.
What if the aliens come down and they can only resonate with someone who might be like Richard Nixon? But there's no Richard Nixon, so someone has to act like him.
Guys, I
really
don't.
And that will save the planet.
I really don't think we need to conjure up such extremist analogies or examples.
Yeah, all right.
It's a profession, and some people are passionate about it, and that is what lights them up and sets them on fire, and they're passionate about. So let them just be.
Yeah, because what if the person, if that person wants to be an actor, can't become an actor, then they got to go do other stuff, and then they become depressed and end up murdering
someone.
Well, that
is the way the world works.
Yeah, exactly.
I would so love to
depressed and murder someone.
You know, I would so love to be Beyonce, but I can't sing. I don't look as good as her. It's not going to happen. So I must just suck it up and move on. Some people would love to be a scientist, but they just aren't intellectually that well gifted. So they have to suck it up and move on. But we can't deny people.
All right. Well, what was your backup plan? Like, what career would you have gone into if you couldn't do what you are doing?
I don't know. I thought this last week.
Did you?
Yeah.
And what did you come up with?
I don't know.
What did you come up with? I mean, like, what do you think you'd be able to handle? What would you be able to stomach?
I've worked in corporate, and I've had jobs before anyone could do that. So, I mean, I could just, I don't know, lie in an interview and get some sort of job, because I'd be an actor then. So deep down, I'm actually an actor.
Okay. Well, there's an admission.
Wow. Look at you, Martin Scorsese.
Look, a lot of such bullshit.
So if you had to work in a big company, you could probably stomach it. And, yeah. You know, if you needed, let's say you and Daniela had a kid or something, and you needed to support it. And then you would do that? You would go into a corporate job, and that would be you done.
And then I'd be a hypocrite, because I'd basically be acting. I mean, I'm not overly skilled in a variety of things. I mean, I can do stuff on the computer.
Sure, but that's some realization, huh?
It is a bit.
Yeah.
I guess I would.
I've often thought about it, too. I think everybody does. Like, what if I weren't doing what I'm doing, what would I be doing?
Mm-hmm.
What would I be able to tolerate? I'm not saying you have to love it.
Yes.
What would I be able to tolerate?
Well, I think I'm more lucky in the sense that I always knew that ultimately what I wanted to do was to talk to people. And I remember at school when I was like, well, I just want to be a journalist and I want to interview people. And, you know, my teachers would look down on me, or my parents are like, okay, and what's your
serious
job?
I did with that person who asked about acting.
So I was like, oh, damn it. What else would garner me respect in society, but I'd be able just to talk to people? And at a point, I considered being a therapist. Genuinely, to some people, it would be such a bore, but I love the fact that I'd be able to sit every day and someone comes to tell me their problems. I'm like, what?
Yes. So it wouldn't be like a massive escape from what we're doing currently. Thing is, we kind of give each other terrible advice on a daily basis.
I think I would give great advice, but I just want to hear about people's lives. So, oh, and that's what your sister did, and that one Christmas morning screwed you up for your whole life. No, so I'd have fun. And so, I'm glad that it's fun.
Yeah, I'd actually love to do that too.
What's a therapy?
Yeah.
Be a therapist.
Because you can't really be wrong. You've really been put on this pedestal by going into an office. So you can't really, there's not much of an area. Yeah. Because you're already the expert.
Mm.
Yeah. No, maybe I think it would get very tedious eventually to have to listen to all these other people's problems.
Yeah, of course. And you have to have therapy yourself to get through the therapy.
Sure. There's a lot of that, huh? There's a huge amount of that in therapists go to therapists.
Sure. But I think it's also just a professional reference point, because you're constantly working your craft. But I think we all have this sort of God dilemma in our minds, all do. And I think as being a therapist, you almost feel like I am that person because I am the master of these thoughts in your path.
Well, I imagine.
Ooh, you sound and that's like what you
really
want.
And that's Invictus. What you're really in it for, Sia.
I don't.
Can you imagine how terrible Sia would be there? Because he would do this professionally during the day, get a bottle of Chardonnay him in the evening and be, oh my gosh, this guy, I gotta tell you.
He would tell everybody's stories.
It, and he would just tell stories. He would have like an anonymous podcast.
Why do you think I love hosting dinner parties? Because I sit and I talk about people.
All right, we've got to get into the five things you need to know this morning. I can't believe how quickly the first half hour has gone, and we've just, it feels like we just got started. But we do need to talk about something that I noticed on social media yesterday. And maybe it's because we're so close to this, or maybe it's because it's a South African thing, or maybe it's just a human thing. I don't know. And again, I'm going to go into this with no judgment, but what is it with us that when someone dies, like Winnie Madikizela Mandela or Pam Golding, that we have to imagine that they were perfect? That we are unable to call on, and we kind of touched on this yesterday, but not in a big way, that we struggle to say a bad thing or to review them objectively, as history will. Because, you know, we may think someone is terrific, but ultimately after like 50 years of history, and not sometimes even less, sometimes like a year or two of history, people will start to review that life in an objective sense, and they will criticize that person's life. They will say, well, this person was not exemplary for X, Y, and Z reason. And I need to know, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because I'm not sure I understand it at all. What is it about us humans, and particularly here in South Africa, and particularly around something like Winnie Madikizela Mandela's death, that we feel we have to beatify someone. We have to make them a saint.
Oh, that's the word of the day.
Pardon? We have to beatify them.
Beatify.
Well, Gareth, I think just by saying the word saint, you've just proven that it's all religious teaching gets us like this. A lot of things in life are because of religious ways.
We can't just say, you know, this was a person who was good and bad, like all of us, because there's good and bad in everybody. And we couldn't just say, you know, we miss her or rest in peace or whatever. And I mean, I saw some people commenting, like there've been a number of international news networks. Mm. None of the local news networks have been brave enough to give an honest biography.
Oh, no, they'd be shut down.
They are shocking. Shocking. I mean, the quality of actual objective news reporting in South Africa is so bad. And this Winnie Madikizela Mandela death proves it. I've been looking for a good reason to have a problem with South African media in general, because I do believe we're being given a very low grade product. And this incident of her death has proven that actually we have no objectivity in the news media. Everybody is following an ideological line. They're all trying to pander to an audience that don't even buy. I don't know where this comes from, this need to impress people that don't necessarily even have the economic clout to make you a successful publication, that don't have the ability to effect any kind of important change in an organization or in a country. But they're taken terribly, terribly seriously. Now, the international news media have reported about Winnie's very colorful, very controversial life.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have been pretty scathing. Now, you can't ignore that. You can't pretend history isn't what history is. This is a woman who appeared in front of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which otherwise was mostly apartheid murderers. There's a good reason that happened. There's a part of her history she wasn't very proud of. There's a part of her history that Nelson Mandela certainly didn't want anything to do with. There's a part of her history the ANC didn't want anything to do with. For a long time, she was not called the mother of the nation. But what is it with us in South Africa now, because this is our problem to own, that we are incapable of being objective about someone when they've just died, or for at least a few months afterwards, and for some people it lasts longer than that. You know, there's some people who still don't think it's an appropriate time to tell Amelia Earhart jokes because it's too soon. So we got to think about that, and I'd love to hear your answers because it really has been bothering me over the last 2 days. I've been reading such twaddle from people who really ought to be a little more balanced. I'd like to know what you think.
And these are what, journalists in particular, yeah, or most, news agencies?
No, I'm talking about journalists. I mean, you know, if an ordinary member of the public is hurt and they have an opinion about a certain person, or if they're very, very bereft that someone has died, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I understand an ordinary member of the public doesn't have to be objective, but it is incumbent upon journalists to be so. At very least, to attempt it. There's not even one journalist in South Africa brave enough to be honest about Winnie Madikizela Mandela. Not one. It's almost as if they whitewash the history. They're like, well, we'll remember her as we choose to remember her, not as she really was. Which is very, very strange, because even her ex-husband, her political party, and other former presidents have a different view on her. And it's like they're being ignored. It's like you can hear Madiba's voice hollering into the silence and the deafening, the bouncing, the echo is bouncing back at him.
So you're saying she shouldn't get a state funeral?
No. I'm not. For God's sake, I'm not going to even go down that road.
No, it's not about that, Ben. Ben, you know, you're just being provocative. Now.
Exactly.
He's just saying.
But I'm saying there is no kind of, everyone is just, it's like everybody's a child in that family. Like, we're all so upset that if anyone talks about this person, we react like it's a family member. And I understand how important Winnie was. Don't get me wrong. I understand the symbolism and the impact that she had on South Africa at a very, very important time in our history. But that enables you to rewrite the history concerns me slightly. It makes me wonder about your ability to understand the world around you, like
it's a good point to take
in the objective facts and be able to figure out your way through the world. And maybe that's why so many people are lost and think that the world is against them and think that they, you know, that everybody is their enemy. Maybe because they don't understand the environment. They're like trying to make sense of the world, but they don't have the equipment to be realistic because they want to see it their way, and then they're always fighting the tide because their way of seeing it isn't the objective truth, and then they wonder why they get lost. Maybe that's it. I don't know. I'd like to hear your thoughts. We'll get to that later.
I think it's going to be interesting when F.W. de Klerk passes away what these thoughts are on what you just said now.
What do you mean?
Well, again, people are going to be like, well, there's going to be such differing views about this, but people are going to be a lot more open because it was F.W.
Oh, no. It's going to be very easy. A lot of people will say he was the devil.
Yeah, because it'll be easier to bring up the negative about someone in that case.
And a lot of people will say, well, you know, he definitely doesn't deserve a state funeral. That's what people will say. But he's a former president, so he's automatically going to get a state funeral.
I'm already like,
and then people are going to be furious about it.
I can already sense the headache.
And then when Ujekov gets a state funeral, I mean,
people will do the same.
He was just pure crap, though. I mean, he offered nothing to this country.
Anyway, look,
there's an objective view that no one could really fight.
I'm pleased you brought that up, actually. That's going to be a hell of a thing to watch, because we can compare them side by side then. And we can say F.W. de Klerk, Jacob Zuma, and let's see how we feel about them, because we know presidents are entitled to state funerals, full stop. So let's see what happens when those go down, because I can guarantee you that the reaction will not be the same, which means that people are incapable of being objective, and therefore, maybe my theory holds some water, that that's why their lives are so hard, because they're not realistic about the world.
Good point.
All right. Horrible stories in the news this morning from Northern California. I don't know if you saw this in the headlines, but the five things you need to know. Police in Northern California responding to reports of an active shooter at YouTube headquarters in San Bruno. San Bruno police warned on Twitter to stay away from the area, housing the headquarters of the Google-owned video sharing service near San Francisco. We're responding to an active shooter. And police say four people have been injured in the shooting, the extent of injuries unknown. One deceased female with self-inflicted wounds was found in the building, and the investigation is ongoing. They say they received 4 to 5 patients from a shooting at the headquarters. Some employees recounted frantic scenes as they fled, with one saying he saw blood on the floor as he escaped. Mm-hmm. We were sitting in a meeting and we heard people running because it was rumbling the floor. First, we thought it was an earthquake. Employee Todd Sherman tweeted, I looked down and saw blood drips on the floor and stairs, peeked around for threats, and then we headed downstairs and out of the front. TV helicopter video shows officers patting down people grouped outside a building and police vehicles surrounding the area. San Bruno police could not provide more information.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's sounds crazy. Another shooting. So if you know any more about that, maybe you want to help us. But they say that the suspect is a female and she died at the scene. So we won't even necessarily know what her motives were. That's always one of the most frustrating things about these shootings is when they kill themselves, you never really know why, right? And you can't ask them. Special official funeral for Madikizela Mandela to be held at Orlando Stadium on April the 14th. And I heard she's going to be buried in four ways. Did you see that?
Yeah, I don't understand the relevance or the significance of four ways.
Neither do I.
There hasn't been much of an explanation.
I mean, the only person I know who deserves to be buried in four ways is Hard Eddie. But let's leave that
four
alone.
Four ways in, one way
Winnie
out.
Madikizela Mandela will be given a Category 1 special official funeral, President Cyril Ramaphosa said on Tuesday. So it's not a state funeral, but a special official funeral. It entails elements of military ceremonial honors and is declared for persons of extraordinary credentials, specifically designated by the president and in line with the presidency's state official and provincial official funeral policy. Stalwart was a recipient of the Order of Luthuli in silver for her excellent contribution to the fight for the liberation of the people of South Africa. And she is going to be buried in four ways, according to the funeral, the family. Where in four ways? Is there a cemetery that we should know about in four ways? You would think, sure, like, is, yeah. Soweto is, you know, like there's the Hector Peterson Memorial. There are so many other really, really important sites in Soweto. And Soweto was where Winnie was. I don't know. Why would they bury in four? I'm fascinated by that. I can't be the only one, right?
That's all that the family said. A Themba Matanzima just spoke on behalf of the family yesterday, saying that she'll be buried in four ways. Very odd.
Yeah. And meanwhile, despite the drizzle, people continued to arrive at the house yesterday to place flowers, which is nice. And Pule Mabe of the ANC said, the plan is going to detail the activities that we are going to have up to the 14th when we finally lay Mama to rest. These activities are going to happen countrywide. One of the highlights is that we're going to be launching a condolence book. So you can go along and write in the condolence book. And there are MKVA veterans outside the Winnie Mandela house at the moment.
Yeah, I wonder how that the energy outside her home is, because I just saw a brief clip yesterday on social media of the EFF singing and dancing outside the home, and Musi Maimane was walking up to pay his condolences. Then they started protesting against Musi. I'm thinking, but guys, really? Like,
you know, what a strange thing to do. Like, your grief is just for you. What a strange thing to be, to want to own is the grief. What a strange thing to behave like when people are, I mean, if Musi Maimane, for whatever reason, I don't know what his relationship with Winnie was. Maybe he's just politically grandstanding because he does that a lot. But he's entitled to be sad. And maybe he's sad just as a black South African. Maybe he's sad as someone who lived in Soweto for a while. Maybe he's sad as someone who looked up to Winnie. You don't know. Why would you want to take away his opportunity to mourn? What kind of a person takes away someone else's opportunity to mourn? That is such a poverty of character.
And as well, I understand she was a political leader, but you know, it's just not the time or the place for bringing up your politics and how you feel about people. Just if you're there as the EFF and you're there to support, then get there and support. Don't now make this an EFFDA thing. Like, no.
Yeah. All right. In other news, Trump says he wants the U.S. troops out of Syria. He reiterated on Tuesday he wants the U.S. troops to be pulled out of Syria and indicated that a decision had not yet been taken. I want to bring our troops back home. I want to start rebuilding our nation, Trump said, indicating that U.S. troops will leave once the Islamic State group is routed. Our primary mission, in terms of what we were there for, was to get rid of ISIS. We've almost completed that task. You know, I've got to say, this General Mattis, who's the Secretary of Defense,
yes,
quietly gone about just wiping out ISIS. You don't hear about it much in the news. You don't see a lot of it in the reporting. But ISIS have pretty much been destroyed under General Mattis, which is great, isn't it?
What's his nickname?
Mad Dog.
Mad Dog. Mad Dog.
He's just gone about his business and done exactly what he's there to do. And nobody's making a fuss. But he's wiping ISIS out. They've lost all their strongholds in Iraq. They're about to become nothing. This was the world's most terrifying terrorist organization not so long ago. They're about to be nothing. Trump added he would consult with allies and suggested that Saudi Arabia might pay the bill for the U.S. troops being there. Saudi Arabia is very interested in our decision, and I said, well, you know, you want us to stay, maybe you'll have to pay. That's what Trump said. So he has ideas about who should pay for this, and he doesn't think it should be America, which maybe makes sense. And then finally, another story out of the international news. Malaysia has approved a law banning fake news ahead of the elections.
Oh, very good. Good luck policing that.
Malaysia's parliament on Monday passed a law prohibiting fake news that critics fear will be abused to silence dissent ahead of a general election. I mean, how do you know what's fake and what isn't anymore on the internet? What you really got to do then is ban the internet, which is probably not a good idea. I mean, it's definitely not a good idea. So there are five things you need to know today. Let's turn our attention to the cryptocurrency market and then get to Ben for the sport, shall we? Quick message that just came through. Good morning, team. I am a nursing sister in charge of an 8-bed neonatal ICU. My alternative career would be police. Okay. That's interesting because we were talking about alternate careers just a minute ago. Someone says, people revere everything about the dead because they think giving them dignity will keep them at bay from spooking them. It's an interesting point of view. And it's just nonsense from people who are scared of death. Maybe. Apparently, according to somebody here, there is a cemetery in Four Ways out in Cedar Road. It is called Four Ways Memorial Park, and that's likely where she's going to be buried. And then Greg says, my wife made a point about Winnie. She said that there was good and bad, but with some of the stuff that she was involved in, she would have probably made a better wife to Jacob Zuma than to Nelson Mandela. That's Greg. All right.
Yeah, I wonder if it is a South African or an African thing, because in my head I'm trying to think of global examples where someone did things that were not exactly the best during their life, but we forget that. In their death?
No. I don't know. I mean, I'm also struggling to find an example. And the reason I say no is because I'm thinking immediately of someone Ben mentioned earlier, Richard Nixon. When he died at his funeral, people were like, well, he did a lot of bad things. Because I listened to those eulogies just out of interest to see if they would, because he was a proper asshole.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I'm thinking of superficial examples, per se. Like, Michael Jackson, no one mentioned.
No one mentioned the pedophilia?
Not at all. They're like, oh, King of Pop, you're amazing, and we just move past that.
Yeah, good point. Don't know. Maybe for politicians.
No one mentions drugs with Elvis Presley.
Yeah, but we all talk about how he died on the toilet with so many pills in him that he couldn't move.
Hmm.
All right, let's move on. Bitcoin trading at $7,289.01. Ethereum is currently trading at $399.65.
That's important.
Isn't it great? And if you care about Ripple, which is still miserable, $0.52 for Ripple currency at the moment. So cryptocurrency is still in the doldrums. Let's turn our attention to something that hopefully is a little bit more inspiring. Ben has info on the Masters and other sports.
Yeah, indeed, Gareth. The Masters, what an amazing occasion this is for all of golf's best golfers to come through. Although, is it the best field in golf? No, it is many things, but it's not the best field in golf because the Masters, and they have their own tournament, which I told you yesterday, which they control in their own way. They invite like a whole bunch of weird like amateurs because they make it like this gross, grey spectacle. So they want amateurs from around the world to come and play. And then they essentially invite people. So it might not be the strongest field in golf. The Players' Championship definitely is. The US Open even isn't the strongest. So this thing about majors is that there's various ways of qualifying for majors, whereas the Players' Championship at TPC Sawgrass, that's just straight out the PGA Tour's major for the year.
Yeah.
Of course, not known as a major. So that will be the strongest field. So let's just put that in perspective before we get into everything else, because the Masters is incredible. Absolutely incredible. I went through the favorites list yesterday with Jordan Spieth probably being the number one favorite with the bookies, although I would say Rory McIlroy to me would be the real guy to watch this week. And the exciting thing about this is that if McIlroy wins the Masters, he'll be one of only six people to ever win the career Grand Slam. So that's winning all four majors. Of course, Mr. Gary Player was the first international player to do that outside of the Americans. But if McIlroy does it, it'll be so great for golf. Like, I love this story. I think McIlroy is really great. He's a cool guy. He's so exciting to watch. And he had the chance to win the Masters in 2013, I think. Back when Charles Fassel won. I think 2011. One of the two. And he absolutely Greg Normand it on the back nine on Sunday. So if he wins it, I'll be so happy with that. But of course, everybody wants to see Tiger win because that'd be golf's greatest comeback. Or one of sports' greatest comebacks. The thing, Tiger Woods has played 18 Masters tournaments. 18. He won it as a professional. He won his first one. Only 5 times out of 18 has he been outside of the top 5. It's an incredible, incredible record. Considering all the trials and tribulations this guy's had, he would get to the Masters not in form and still somehow be in the top 5. He was just that good. And the guy's presence is already showing. People are following his practice rounds like it's tournament play. There are roars around the golf course with him and his buddy Phil Mickelson making birdies. It's just so much to be excited about right now. So just remember that. Rory McIlroy, he has a chance to win the Grand Slam of Golf this year at the Masters. His fourth time going to the Masters with this heavy weight of expectation around him. And, of course, Jordan Spieth, well, if he wins the US Open this year... No, wait, sorry, I got that wrong. If he wins the PGA Championship this year, he also has the chance to win the Grand Slam. So these are little stories, side stories. Golf right now is in a really, really incredible place that I keep saying. So here's some of the big featured groups for Thursday. Eastern time in America, 10:42 will see Tiger Woods playing with Tommy Fleetwood and Mark Leishman. Sergio Garcia, who is the defending champion, will be playing with Justin Thomas, who's a hot, hot player right now. And a guy called Doc Redman, he is an amateur. Bubba Watson will be playing with Jason Day, Henrik Stenson. And then Phil Mickelson will be playing with Ricky Fowler and Matt Kuchar. Rory McIlroy will be playing with John Rahm, the Spanish talent with a top deck forehead. Playing with Adam Scott as well. And then Jordan Spieth, Alexander Noren, and Louis Oosthuizen will be after that. And then Dustin Johnson, world number one, will be playing with Justin Rose and Rafa Cabrera-Bear. Those are the ones you really got to look out for. And of course, Gary Player will be starting it off with Jack Nicklaus. Arnold Palmer not, because he is dead.
Wow, Jack and Gary stride out onto the course, huh?
Of course, you know, Gary is competitive still, so he'll try beat Jack for the long drive. He'll do a few karate kicks. He'll probably pound his stomach and essentially tell fat kids that they must not be fat.
Yes.
It really is. It's quite something to
see.
What
he does.
It's quite something to see.
Don't be fat.
Yesterday in the cricket, the Aussies arrived at the Wanderers and rather tamely just absolutely rolled over. They rolled over and Vern Philander, he just went through them like Gary through a buffet of green leaves and Brussels sprouts. What an incredible bowler he is. For the 13th time in his career, he got a 5-wicket haul. He finished with match figures of 9 wickets, Gareth. 9 wickets for 51.
So, Ben.
Absolutely incredible.
You put this video together about the Australians crying, and I watched it yesterday. This should be required viewing. You also told me that the Australian Cricket Board immediately had it taken down off of YouTube.
Well, like I don't know what the copyright rules are, but I'm pretty sure I'm allowed to use press conference footage. So I put it onto YouTube, and Cricket Australia, who obviously are having a torrid time of things right now, they saw my video and it was gone within 4 seconds.
But it's interesting, like before before we even get into the merits of it, you basically say in there that these press conferences were a joke. There's no, that they have no value.
They were a complete no joke.
There was nothing in them that was worth listening to. I just want to play a little bit of it, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Do you mind?
Yeah, tears.
Tears. Trying to hold back tears and leaky old eyes. What were all these highly emotional press conferences about with the guilty players and coach of the whole ball tampering mess? Well, they all incorporated a family member for sympathy. Smith had his dad. Bancroft also had his mum. And Warner naturally brought in wife Candace and performed this very deliberate kiss sequence to set the tone. They all dressed pretty much the same and pretty much said the same things.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm very sorry.
And I'm sorry.
I take full responsibility.
And I take full responsibility.
It's my actions and I'm accountable for it here. And
I know I'll regret this for the rest of my life.
I think I'll regret for the rest of my life.
That I'll regret for as long as I live.
I can earn back respect.
And earn the respect back of the community.
And possibly earn your respect again.
I've been so privileged and honoured to represent my country.
And playing for my nation and my state, there is no greater pride to me.
I've only ever wanted to bring glory to my country through playing cricket.
This is all good and well, but nothing was actually being learned from all that was being said here.
Sounds like they were working off the same script, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Like someone had scripted this response, and then they were like, guys, just change the words a little bit so it doesn't sound exactly. And what's the point of a press conference if you're not going to answer questions about what actually happened?
And then the questions came out, and then David Warner, who suddenly sounded like English was his fourth language, he was like,
yeah.
He just sounded like a bad Monty Python character.
Right.
And he just walked away when they were like, Dave, whose idea was it? Who made the sandpaper appear? Blah, blah, blah. But it was such crap. But Gareth, some people were buying it. I mean, we weren't because we're clever people. We see right through all the shenanigans. But Greg Dyer, who is Australia Cricketers Association's president, so these are the guys who look out for players' interests. He said yesterday at a press conference, their distressed faces have sent a message across the globe as effective as any sanction could be. I think Australia cried with Steve Smith last Thursday. I certainly did.
You're an idiot.
You're an idiot, Greg. Yeah. Those things were so well orchestrated. They were so well planned out. And let's never forget, sports people, especially cricketers, everything is done for them. There's always a team manager who has their passports, who knows where their baggage is, who knows where their kit bag is. They just have to arrive and not impregnate strippers. That's all they have to do, basically, as cricketers and sports person. And they still get it wrong. So then it's like, the shit is the fan, and it's like, oh, guys, what do we do? David Warner even said, I want to be a better man. I'm going to find out how I can do this with my advisors. Like, come on.
But just listen to how they responded to the actual questions, the things that we need answers to, like what did you use, sandpaper, who had this? Because there was a conspiracy clearly to do this, and who knows whether it involved the coach or not, but they don't even address those questions. They're more interested in like doing this pleading, hand-wringing apology and hoping to get past this without having to answer any. I hope there's a commission of inquiry into this. There should be, right?
Should be.
All right, listen to this.
I can tell him what happened at
all. This is Buff.
Yeah, we get it. As you keep saying, you knew nothing, Buff. You're in the clear. Just ride off into the sunset, have a beer, and have a laugh.
Can you hand on your heart say that you have never done this in any match before? You've never been involved in a plan to do this in any other match, or that this has not occurred, as to your knowledge, in any other match that Australia has played in?
As I said before, I'm here to accept my responsibility for the part that I played in Day 3 of Newlands Cape Town Test.
Last one, Matt. Dave, do you feel you're being made a scapegoat here? You're holding back with some of your answers. Are you being singled out?
As I said before, I'm here to speak about myself and take responsibility for the part that I played in this.
Whose idea was it, Dave?
Was it your idea?
Who took the sandpaper out
there?
What happened?
And they just shepherd him out of the press conference at that point. They take him away so that he doesn't have to answer any of these questions. There can't be other people responsible if he's not prepared to answer questions.
Can you imagine if Henry van Bredaar just stood up in court and walked away, which he probably was trying to do, but these guys. So David Warner has apparently lost about 55 million rand through all of this because, of course, he's not playing for Cricket Australia and he's not playing for the IPL. So now the lawyers are getting involved. And this is where it's going to get really bad because up until now, these guys have been doing this, what's good for Cricket Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get a lawyer doesn't care about other people. The lawyer cares about you because you're the client. So lawyers are now going to distort this even more. So this is where it's going to get so interesting. They're going to try appeal these bans because dickheads like Greg Dyer, whatever his name is, he's going to say, oh, it's just too harsh. And the lawyers are going to get in there and they're going to be absolute dicks because that's what lawyers do. And Cricket Australia is going to be ripped to shreds here. Just like they were yesterday by Vernon Philander. So, Gareth, a lot more in the story to come out, but we must applaud the fact that the Proteas were 1-0 down in Durban. They got absolutely trousered in that match. They came back and they won 3-1. Now, as Rob Hiring on Sport 24 said, they've essentially now completed the grand slam of Test cricket. They've beaten every Test-playing nation home and away. To think that they've beaten Australia three times away since post-isolation, but they've never beaten them at home, and Faf du Plessis is now a captain who can boast both of those things.
Nice.
Plus, Faf was in charge of Australians crying. So if you think the Proteas have let you down over the last few years, you are right. But at the same time, no one has given us more glory and joy than this current Proteas team. So if you see any of them in public, tell them that they are special because they've done something really great in the sporting circumstance here. They've made Australians cry, hate each other, and basically just be ashamed of themselves. So Faf du Plessis has achieved something so much, and I hope this does get honored at the Laureus Awards or something like that, because there's more to sport than just what happens in the field. Faf du Plessis has done a great thing here. That's pretty much all the time we've got for sport this on this day. Of course, Real Madrid and Bayern Munich, they had wins yesterday in the Champions League, and tonight you get to see Barcelona versus Roma, 8:45 South African time, and the big Liverpool versus Man City Champions League quarterfinals. How very bloody exciting.
Less than 1 month to go before Chance the Rapper performs in South Africa. You can catch him along with Shane Eagle, Nadia Nakai, and Frank Casino at the Castle Light Unlocks Concert Ticket Pro Dome in Joburg. It's all happening on the 30th of April, and the next day is a public holiday, so there's no reason for you to miss out. Get your tickets now at CompuTicket for the Castle Light Unlocks Concert. You don't want to miss this. Castle Light Unlocks exclusive. You want to find out more? Go to cliffcentral.com and download one of O'Neill Africa Experience. And one of those shows, they're Fridays usually if you want to hear them live, but you can get any of the previous shows and you can hear for yourself. Nadia Nakai was on, Shane Eagle's been on.
It's that extra long weekend.
Mm-hmm.
At
the end of the month.
27th, I think it's the Friday, the 1st is the Monday.
Correct.
Alrighty.
Time for Sia.
Oh, okay. So this morning I have some good medical news coming out of our own very city, Johannesburg. And it's the University of Johannesburg, folks, get ready for a round of applause,
okay,
has announced that its researchers have found a potential new anti-cancer drug, nice, which could ultimately change the face of treatment forever. So UJ just spoke out saying that its researchers found this new anti-cancer drug that will effectively kill cancer cells. The dose will be 10 times lower than that of chemotherapy. The researchers have confirmed that the silver-based compound may prove to be effective against cancer whilst also having a significantly lower toxicity. That's a word. Right. And then ITI on the end. That one. Then chemotherapy drugs. So the researchers say the most promising complex among these has been successfully tested in rats first, ANA, in several human cancer cell lines in lab studies. And the complex is as effective against cancer cells found in the human esophagus as a widely used chemotherapy drug, but at a 10 times lower dose and much lower toxicity. As you said, against all of these long words this morning. Non-malignant cells. There we go. So esophageal cancer is currently resistant to all chemotherapy drugs on the market. So these test results are incredibly promising. This compound is being called UJ3, and other tests were run on breast cancer cells as well as melanoma. And the compound targets cancer cells specifically, meaning that healthy cells have more chance of survival, unlike in chemotherapy. Oh. So the silver compound will be much cheaper than chemotherapy as well, which is platinum based. And the research is promising. However, more research is required to determine whether UJ3 can effectively treat cancer in humans. If this compound, though, proves to be a success, it will change the face of cancer treatments across the globe. So to everyone at UJ who's putting in all the hard work in this research, this is awesome. So it's good news coming from UJ.
All right, very good. That's excellent news.
Oh, yeah. And for the medical community overall.
Yeah, I'm glad to see there's a research at UJ that is leading to really positive, immediate medical solutions to our problems.
This is a game changer.
Absolutely.
This is CliffCentral.com.